Donald Trump's America First becomes U.S. foreign policy.
To ensure that our foreign policy is centered on one thing, and that is the advancement of our national interests, which they have clearly defined through his campaign as anything that makes us stronger or safer or more prosperous. And that will be our mission.
What this means for America's relationships.
Well, I think many commentators have said Donald Trump is a transactional type of individual and that his policies are quite transactional when it comes to other countries around the world. I think that's what surprised so many allies, that it seems to be a more transactional than values-based types of relationship.
Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
And my sincerest hope and my prayer is that we will, as a nation, be able to leave the future generations with a country and a planet safer and better than the one that was left for us.
America's new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, spells out his foreign policy priorities that will be at the heart of American diplomacy.
In our republic, the voters decide the course of our nation, both domestically and abroad, and they have elected Donald J. Trump as our president when it comes to foreign policy on a very clear mission. And that mission is to ensure that our foreign policy is centered on one thing, and that is the advancement of our national interest.
On his first day on the job, Rubio also met with allies from the Indo-Pacific region who seek to counter Chinese military and economic ambitions. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports.
On his first day as U.S. Secretary of State, former Republican Senator Marco Rubio told his new employees that their department will promote peace around the world.
Without peace, it is hard to be a strong nation, a prosperous nation, and one that is better off.
But avoiding conflict will be a strategic decision.
Never at the expense of our national security, never at the expense of our national interest, and never at the expense of our core values as a nation and as a people.
Rubio also met Tuesday with the foreign ministers of India, Australia, and Japan. The four countries formed the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, or Quad, a bloc that aims to counter China's economic and military ambitions in the Indo-Pacific region. Tuesday's gathering eased some concerns about the America First approach under President Donald Trump. Yeon Soon, director of the China program at the Stimson Center via Zoom.
It's a clear signal that U.S. is not abandoning the regional coalition, allies and partners in terms of how to counter China's rise.
Beijing denounces the Quad as a Cold War construct, notes analyst Yeon Soon.
Anytime that the U.S. aligns with its allies and partners, the Chinese will feel isolated and feel threatened, and they will accuse the United States of the Cold War mentality.
The analyst pointed out that China's modernization and expansion of its military and nuclear arsenal will only continue driving countries in that region to strengthen their own militaries and seek a closer alignment with the United States. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Lori, Secretary Rubio has had a lot of experience in foreign policy during his time in the U.S. Senate. He sat on the right committees, engaged in the right policy decisions, particularly towards China. He has a lot of interest in what's happening in the relationship between the United States and China.
Right. And that's probably one of the reasons that of all the nominees, he was confirmed unanimously and quickly. So the question now is, how much change will there be in the new administration's vision for America's foreign policy? Joining us now for some perspective is Daniel Hamilton. He is a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution Center on the United States and Europe.
Thank you so much for being able to talk to us about this.
Glad to be here.
So, new administration, new Secretary of State, new priorities, new mission. Secretary Rubio put out a statement and said, everything we do is going to be judged by these three directives from the president. Does it make America safer? Does it make America stronger? And does it make America more prosperous?
Well, I think if you look at what the Secretary has said in just the day or so he's been in office, he has said those things. But I think the underlying message is that he has said that for 70 years, the United States thought preservation of what he called the liberal world order was the main goal of U.S. foreign policy, and that while there were some successes there, it was a triumphalist feeling that that was what we still needed to do. And in the meantime, according to him and to the president, U.S. efforts to do so have left Americans exhausted, poorer. We've lost the industrial capacity of the country. We created dependencies on other countries, all at the time when other countries have been pursuing their national interests and have not joined in that same defense of the world order, and many of them trying to abuse it. So his conclusion is, back to those three points you mentioned, the U.S. will focus on pure national interests as defined in those three ways. You can argue whether preservation of a structure at which the U.S. leads the world is also a U.S. interest, and hasn't that, in fact, brought the end of the Cold War and help us have alliances around the world? That's, I think, part of the debate here in the United States.
One of the things he also stated in an actual statement that he put out today was that we must stop censorship and suppression of information.
He has said a number of things like that. One, the first point that you mentioned is, again, free speech, meaning no guidelines on how, media platforms should conduct themselves, no restrictions on free speech. It has to do a lot with our domestic debate, frankly, right now about curbs on social media. Are they fact-checking what they put out there on platforms? So a lot of it is, frankly, is a domestically oriented statement. But it has to do, they shut down the office that Secretary Blinken had set up about checking, facts and disinformation from other countries, that it was doing a lot of work on Russia and China, for instance. They shut that down already. So I think it's a statement that there's just going to be no controls on that, or no sort of double checking and setting up any types of guidelines. I think the other couple points that the Secretary made in that same context was he said the priorities will be put an end to mass migration, secure the borders. He said the U.S. will not engage anymore in sort of the diversity, equity, inclusion agenda, and directed the department to go, scour its own rules and procedures so it doesn't do that. I think that's quite controversial. He said we will not engage in any sort of what he thought was, or I think, I don't want to misphrase him, but say tangential cultural issues that divert us from those three goals that we mentioned earlier. That has huge implications for how the U.S. is engaged in cultural programming around the world. And then he said, we're going to abandon the earlier climate goals of Biden administration and others. The president's already said we'd step away from the global climate talks. And Secretary Rubio, doubled down on saying the goal is actually to achieve what he called energy dominance. So to put the U.S. in the position of really being a major energy player in the world, if not the dominant one. Those are all things he said. Those are the main things he said that are important. It's also interesting what he didn't say. He hasn't said much about managing relations with allies or adversaries. He did say the first meeting he's having today was with the Quad and the Pacific Quad. So he did go that far, but he has had some media interviews where he hasn't really discussed too much in detail how you talk about managing conflicts or bringing them to an end in Europe and in the Middle East. He said a bit about Ukraine, only saying all sides have suffered and we have to put an end to the war. But he hasn't said, how that actually will happen.
A lot of the things that you talked about, ending DEI inside the department, energy dominance, not really attending to global warming. These are administration-wide policies. It's not just state. It's just that he's the first cabinet member to be confirmed. But I think you're going to see those same themes roll out across every single department in the government. But since this is state and it's our, the relationship holder with the rest of the world, how does that push out to other countries, allies and foes?
Well, we'll have to see, because as you say, much of America's relations with the world is not just through the State Department. It's all, every agency in the U.S. government has some sort of international, linkage. What was interesting that Secretary said was to his own new employees is the State Department sometimes been, he said, relegated to secondary roles because other agencies have been more agile or, quicker on their feet. I can only assume he might meet the intelligence community or the defense community or the trade officials. Those all have, major, of course, foreign entanglements as well. So we'll see how Marco Rubio stands up in the interagency debates in the United States about, all these kinds of Trump-induced directives. The other thing, he might be the first member of the cabinet to start his job, but he really has no team. They have a whole bunch of seconded senior officials sort of, keeping seats warm, but there's no one behind him at the moment. And, in the United States, I think it's always important for people to realize almost always the presidential transition when you get senior officials into the government. We switch out the top 4,000 to 6,000 people in the federal government when any new president comes into office. And it usually takes 6 to 8 months before, the real full team is in place. And when it comes to the State Department, ambassadors have to be confirmed. Any senior level official have to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And that delays things a lot. So I think Marco Rubio will be home alone for some time. He'll have to just manage. But I don't think this is going to be a quick burst of energy here, because he'll find easily the day-to-day diplomacy is still being run by senior professionals in the Foreign Service.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about one of the things that the Secretary said. You mentioned that he talked about returning to the basics of diplomacy by eliminating focus on political and specifically, you said, cultural causes.
Yes.
And you said that would have broad implications. I'm wondering what those implications would be in your view.
Well, again, it's hard to know what he meant. That was, one line in a speech. But the State Department engages in cultural diplomacy everywhere in the world. Major information channels, cultural programming, lots of U.S. cultural groups go out around the world. We work with the State Department to, everything you can think about, arts and culture, they're all over, everywhere. That's putting America's face forward in terms of the society that we are. So it's hard to know what of those elements he considered, I think, as he said, tangential to the core mission. Does cultural programming make America stronger? Does it make it safer? Does it make it more prosperous? Those are his benchmarks. So I think cultural programmers in the State Department will have to answer the question there. Yes, it does make us stronger by showing the diversity and the vibrancy of our society. It makes us safer by other countries getting to know us better and understanding, what's important to the United States. Does it make us more prosperous? Well, the U.S. cultural, industry, if you will, is probably the leading one in the world compared to others. So I think they can answer that question, but they'll be under pressure to show that. And how that translates into any particular type of program, it's, of course, very hard to say. It has to do with also exchange programs, most likely, because the State Department administers so many exchange programs or international visitors programs that you could say, or they are in the Cultural and Educational Bureau of the State Department. So will those be cut? Will they be changed in any way? Are there new criteria of which visitors we would like to have? Those are all things I think it would be good to keep watching.
We talked to somebody recently in the not-too-distant past who said the world is changing, and this type of, you mentioned it in the very beginning, this type of, you know, big machine diplomacy and alliance is changing, that Europe is becoming a non-player, China is emerging, the global south is emerging, and that in the future, global diplomacy is going to be a more transactional affair. Do you see that or agree with that or disagree with that?
Well, I think many commentators have said Donald Trump is a transactional type of individual and that his policies are quite transactional when it comes to other countries around the world. And I think that's what surprised so many allies, that it seems to be a more transactional than values-based types of relationship. I haven't heard him, since he's become president again, or Secretary Rubio, use those words. So it's hard to, you know, ascribe it to them. But as I say, I think the thrust of it that both of them are saying is that the U.S., by upholding the liberal order, as they called it, sacrificed unduly. And I think even Secretary Rubio in his confirmation hearing said, you know, we were cheated and, you know, they stole things from us. So this is kind of a, you know, an angry type of tone about other countries. And they don't distinguish too much between allies or adversaries. And it'll come down to real policies. For instance, tariffs. President Trump wants to impose tariffs. He said that a lot. He has said that a lot. It's coming, he says. We shall see. Well, tariffs will influence foreign policy. And the question is whether the State Department was going to drive that policy, or whether it'll be the White House itself or the U.S. Trade Representative's office. Back to the interagency fights that are certain to come about who is really setting the direction of these types of policies. I'm not sure the State Department will be in the lead on that type of effort, because it's driven really from the White House. I'm not sure the State Department will be in the lead when it comes to trying to bring the war against Ukraine to an end, because there's a special envoy that's reporting directly to the president. I'm not sure the State Department is going to lead on a whole range of issues that are traditionally foreign policy, but which the White House itself is going to direct. So, you know, this is the Trump foreign policy. It's not the Rubio foreign policy. I mean, the Secretary has said that, but I think one needs to find where will the State Department really play the decisive role, and I think that's still very much up for grabs.
Mm. All right. Well, we thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really informative. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Daniel S. Hamilton, a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution's Center on the United States and Europe.
He laid that out really well, giving us a really good sort of overview of what we can look forward to, with obviously a lot more details to come in the future to sort of go from there as to what each will actually look like.
I think that we can, you know, we talked about it early on in the interview. I think we can expect, if you're sitting there going, you know, what do I expect out of the new U.S. government? I think it's these four themes are going to play out across the entire government. And I think that it's asking the question, what's in it for America? Does it make America safer? Is the relationship good for America? And I think you look at it through those prisms, no matter what it is,
right?
Energy, State Department, Department of Defense, every facet of the American government, I think, are going to rally around these core questions.
Well, you've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for being with us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24 hours a day, check out our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.